This is Impact, a daily look at how we are coping with the coronavirus in Nevada. I'm Carrie Kaufman. I spent the first half of my adult life doing, watching, and writing about theater. But I really spent those decades of the 90s and aughts writing about life. Performing, which was the newspaper I started back when the first Bush was ending his presidency, covered politics, race, sexual and workplace harassment. We wrote about economic development and leadership and being a working parent and global issues and policies. Because arts is a lens that refracts and makes sense out of the entire world. It is our common language, our shared experience. These are the things that I have learned from theater. To be in the moment, to always be authentic and present, to be emotionally available. If you bottle yourself up and follow outside rules rather than inside intuition, you will not be a good leader. You simply won't see the people you're trying to lead, and you may not even see yourself. To listen, to truly listen, not just with your ears, but with your whole being. To take risks. I started a radio show that you're listening to on 2 days' notice. I'm a gay single mother who reoriented her career halfway through her life. To say yes and. That's one of the main tenets of improv. You come into a given situation, you find agreement, then you add something to help it move forward. Theater has taught me how to live. It's made me a good journalist and interviewer and manager. It's made me a halfway decent teacher. It's made me a damn good mother. We're going to talk today about how arts are influencing us in this time of lockdown and fear, and how we can take the lessons that arts have to teach us to see our way through to more meaningful experiences on the other side. I am joined today, as I am going to be every Friday, by Sarah O'Connell. Sarah is the artistic director of Asylum Theater and former associate director at American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. She is also a fierce arts advocate and leader and has stepped up to bring the performance community in Las Vegas together, even before this pandemic. Matt Elwell is an old friend from my Chicago theater days. He's executive director of CSZ Worldwide and a speaker and consultant in applied improvisation. CSZ Worldwide produces comedy sports. In addition to his exec duties, Matt has been a performer in comedy sports for 20 years, and now they're doing it online, and he will talk about that a little bit. Welcome to both of you.
Hey.
Thank you.
So both of you I met because I interviewed you, and I was okay. I was like, oh, yeah, I want to keep these people. This is somebody I'm keeping in my life. So when I thought about this, you were the two people that I thought of to start off this conversation about how arts and performance and theater can really impact, and I think save the world. I've always thought this, even in my most cynical moments. I have debated this question with you two before, so here we are on the air on live radio. Before we go to this, though, I do want to, there is some news that I want to get out to people today. Two items arrived in my inbox around 3 o'clock this afternoon. One was from the governor's office. It was kind of grim, but it was expected. Governor Sisolak has told heads of various state agencies to start figuring out where to cut budgets. It reads in part, "One does not have to be a statistician or budget analyst to know that government budgets are taking significant hits, as actual revenue will not meet our previous projected revenue expectations. My direction to my staff and the governor's office is that we will be surgical and thoughtful in our approach to this problem. While we must have percentage targets to start this process, we will not just simply make a strict percentage cut across the board in our budgets. I believe to do so would be a disservice to the citizens of Nevada. And we cannot, and I will not, cut the budgets of those agencies that provide the necessary resources for those on the front lines of the COVID-19 response." Sisolak's letter was a page and a half, and that last paragraph I just read kind of answers some of the questions that we were talking about last night, in the fact that the county has suspended the union contracts for UMC Hospital. And Sisolak is saying that nobody on the front lines is going to be cut in this in this massive budget cut. And yes, Sarah, I was hearing about 14%. On the other hand, I got a very short email from CCSD saying that this morning CCSD received clarifying information from the governor's office that the determination of essential functions of the district's operation were left to the superintendent. CCSD is working with the Education Support Employees Association to maintain essential functions of the district to serve our families and community. So, Sarah, breathing hard here. A lot of people took this when I put it on Facebook as, oh, well, you know, they're sending janitors and maintenance people into schools, which they are, because that just kind of came up. And a lot of people are saying you can't send them into schools. You're putting them in danger and what have you. I've been told that they're going to be social distancing. The schools are pretty much virus free because they've been sitting empty for a long time. But I see this, and you reacted, Sarah, to the same thing I reacted, which was district operations were left to the superintendent.
Yes.
This kind of scares me. What's your reaction here?
Well, there are already so many issues with lack of trust between teachers, parents, the school board, and the superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
Due to a year of turmoil to do with budgets and vice principals and deans,
right,
and all the rest.
Right.
That essentially saying that Jara is the one who gets to decide whose jobs are untouchable. It's going to turn into less transparency. And that was already a problem.
Right.
And I don't know how that's going to get us out of the challenges we face faster.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way. So we're going to follow up on that next week and talk to some people who can give us a little clarification on this. And I've asked many times, does Jara have the ability, did the board in doing its emergency meeting last week give him the ability to make decisions without board approval? And I was told no. So we will see how that goes. I just kind of wanted to bring that up, and we'll figure it out next week. We'll talk about it more next week.
I hope it's just not another fine mess. That's all.
Yes.
We have enough of those on our hands.
Yes. I hope it's not another fine mess either.
Yeah.
So let's go. Let's talk about arts. You just had Matthew. Okay, I'm Matt.
I just I like I was to call. In trouble.
No, right, exactly. I like to do that. I like to call people Michael when their name is Mike. Both of you are artists and you are teachers. Matt, you actually are in the business of teaching corporate types how to incorporate improv skills to make them better at their jobs. So, talk to me about how this all works.
On the corporate training side?
Yeah, on the corporate training side. Like, why is it? You know, we're talking about how arts can change things and make the world better.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because we sit passively in a theater and watch people and laugh at people and cry at people, but because actively it makes you better to do it. So talk to me about how you're talking to corporate people about that.
Yeah, well, you know, it started with a very simple formula in that we were doing these improv shows. You know, Comedy Sports is two teams of improvisers. They're competing against each other. So it's real kind of family friendly, which meant, you know, it was HR friendly. So office parties would go there and stuff. And managers would watch our teams work together. And you know, in an improvised scene, if any of your, you know, listeners have seen Whose Line Is It Anyway, they know that, you know, there's no kind of pre-planning, or there's not supposed to be, right? You go out on stage and you just create something in front of an audience. So, you know, there's really no net. And managers would see that, and they would, you know, come to the cast after the show and say, can you teach my team to work together as well as your team does? And, you know, being small business entrepreneurs, the answer was, sure, we could.
Absolutely.
And then we had to find out how to do that. So, you know, it started as kind of quasi team building where we just took a basic 101 improv course that we would use to teach someone to do this stuff on stage. And we would just run corporate types through the first, you know, hour and a half of that curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'd be very much like a baby's first improv class. And, you know, it was so different from what they normally did that they would get a kick out of it. So it's sorry for my cat's.
That's what I love this. Okay, go ahead. It is not. I love the fact that you said baby. And as soon as you said that, your cat's wailed. And it kind of sounded like a baby, but I knew it was cat.
Yeah,
so yeah,
it did.
Yeah, that was perfect. Okay, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. I'm trying, my cat is the perfect improviser because I'm trying to get it to like jump up and do something to get itself out of turmoil, but won't. It'll just keep standing and whining when it could very easily be comforted, but it won't.
Okay.
So then, you know, my arc became, you know, I got bit by the improv bug and that upset my parents because I was going to have a real job. And then I got bit by the training bug. And so once we did these kind of very basic things, I started learning more about instructional design and figuring out that, you know, this improv really does have a place, or at least the kind of improv game as an exercise has a place alongside other traditional interactive training games. And so then it started to make a lot of sense why we would use this, because just as, you know, there's this guy named Thiagi and another guy named Mel Silberman, and they have these training games and they never use the word improv, but it's the same basic idea. And you can pull one of those out and put a Spolin game in or a Boal game in, and you've got the formula. But then, and I think this might tie into where we're at right now, is there became a kind of another level, which was improv, not just as a metaphor, improv, not just as this kind of bag of tricks that we can use to improve learner engagement. But then there was this ethos around yes, and how we treat each other and,
right,
and what it really means to have each other's back. And so then it was not kind of improv to teach you how to do communication skills, but it was, you know, how to be an improviser in your daily life.
Right.
And I think right now with what everyone's dealing with, it's really the resilience and the optimism that comes with risking yourself in an improv scene that we need right now.
Resilience and optimism. I also want you to define yes and. I talked about it a little bit in the opening, but how do you talk about it when you are talking to people who don't really necessarily have theater experience?
Yeah, I think that's where I may diverge from other improv people, because I grew up on the East Coast and started doing improv in between sets of a Beatles cover band in Newcastle, Delaware. it was like, all right, you're going to play the 10 minutes while the band is getting their drinks. And if you don't knock anything over, we'll give you a plate of French fries afterwards. That was my introduction. So I didn't kind of get embroiled in the kind of yes and cult that's pretty strong these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I'm really careful to say that yes and is not groupthink. I feel like we get into that a lot. And instead what it is how fast can I acknowledge what's really happening? And then what can I do about it? So for me, I don't look at yes and as I have to do what you think. I look at yes and as I have to honor what you created. And so where I'm looking at it as, no, we can't deny reality, but we are empowered to do something and we can take care of ourselves. So we're not stuck with somebody else's crappy reality.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yes. How does yes and work in our lives? I mean, I know how I have incorporated it into my life, which I absolutely did at a pretty early age, once I figured out that that it's just about resilience and optimism, that it's about, you know, saying yes, moving forward. Every time I have regretted doing something, it's because I didn't do something. And we are here now, and people are having to think about what they're doing in this time of coronavirus, and artists especially are having to think about what they're doing. Sarah, when you had a meeting today of artists who are running business, right? Businesses, right?
We were doing some informational Zoom sessions with a local attorney to try to help artists understand the financing and resources in the new laws.
Okay, so what is available to artists? What did you hear?
Well, First of all, there, unlike past times when the Congress has passed laws, this time there really are things you can apply for and get. So whether it's unemployment, or if you are an independent contractor who does 1099 work, you can actually apply for some of these small business loans. The thing is, take the time to look around and apply. There's no harm if they say no, they say no, but there is money out there to try to help people get through this. So don't be afraid, first of all, to click on those links and look around. And for nonprofits, to understand that you are small businesses, so all those small business loans you're hearing about, they count for nonprofit companies as well.
They apply to you.
So that's the biggie.
So are the small business center here in Southern Nevada, they don't deal with nonprofits, right?
No, their mandate is to work with commercial business. However, their website still has all the information that you'll need to apply for loans.
Okay.
They just can't take you on as a case, but you can still get helpful information. They can still try to refer you to people who might be able to help. Also, Nevada Legal Services.
Okay.
There is a group of lawyers who are supposed to do pro bono work for nonprofits. I'm just not sure what the scope of their program is right now.
Okay.
To say, yeah.
We will have links about this on Nevada on the Facebook page for Nevada Voice, Facebook/Nevada Voice. It's interesting to me, Matt, that you are both an executive and you are still performing or playing with people on stage. That's something that I feel is completely different. I feel like we promote people in this world because they're good at one thing, and we give them a totally different job because they can't make money at their first job. And then they kind of leave and never go back to the thing that they're really good at. What keeps you playing and running things at the same time?
Well, for me, it's that I screwed up. So my job before this was as president and CEO of our local club here in Chicago, CSE Chicago. And then I got the opportunity for this national position, which actually freed me up to do more kind of independent work, learning and development, stuff like that. So it really consolidated me around the stuff I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I was no longer worried about like the alarm going off at 3 a.m. and how much should we price this beer for? Like,
right.
I got to a different space. But you know, what I did before that was artistic director. So I went from complete art orientation in the theater to complete business.
Yeah.
And I, being a very stable genius, decided that when I became president and CEO, that it wasn't a good idea for me to still play, that I needed to focus on the business. And there were older players, people who had played for years, who were like, Matt, it's a terrible idea. Keep playing. And I thought, no, it's not the right look. It's not what I should do. And it was a terrible decision, especially because, you know, there's all these kind of mental health benefits to playing improv. So, like, I wasn't as sharp and I wasn't as happy. And a lot of kind of that quadrant two, the sharpen the saw kind of stuff of being more able, the resilience and optimism I talked about, I was spending all of my reserves.
Yeah.
And so when I got out of that role and moved into this role, I started playing again and I tried to rebuild. And I mean, it took over a year to get back to a fraction of the kind of ability or the craft that I was able to kind of produce on stage. But man, I'm so much happier now. And you know, it's funny, like I get the idea that it's counterintuitive, but it's really not in the same sense that like there are, you know, CEOs who do yoga and there's CEOs who do all these other things for their mental health.
Right.
Performing for me is that. And it also, like, you want to talk about mission orientation. Like if you're involved in improv or you're involved in theater, having a chance to actually do some of it, you know, and for other theater people, that might be working the board or that might be something behind the scenes, but getting into that, not losing that kind of time that doing something you fell in love with in the organization,
right,
I think is really critical.
And I think that that's an important thing as we're sitting here trying to figure out what to do and how to earn a living and spending time with our family and finding silver linings. I feel like getting back to what you love what you loved and kind of forgotten about because you had to make money, you had to be a parent, you had to do this or that. I think that's part of what you know, we think about arts as something that we give our kids, you know, to keep them busy. But it's something that can actually make us feel better. Sarah, you teach you teach directing and acting. How are you teaching people how to live also?
Well, I think because I am an artist, I can't help but see the world and my life, and no matter how what part of it I'm living, through the lens of my art. So as a theater director, I tend to analyze every challenge and conflict the way I would look at a scene in a play, because that's what we're doing in the theater, is we're telling stories, and every story has an element of conflict. So really, if you're a director, you're kind of spend your life studying the nature of conflict and the nature of overcoming obstacles and how people strategize and what action they take to go for what they want. And I think that all of those, all of that studying what drives human behavior and what impacts human decision-making can give you tools for how to face the unknown that we're facing now. Because you started off this show today giving context about your background and who you were, and you had some self-awareness in that, which helps give you a sense of direction of where you want to take the conversation. And it's the same with ourselves. When we use the arts to explore their inner life, we can get some sense of self-awareness that can ground us and help us look ahead a little more clearly. And so it's an important tool for people to have right now, and to because the arts are what teach us how to face the unknown. And we take an obstacle and it becomes an object or subject that we then, we don't fear it, we study it, and we create past it. And so the vision that it's going to take to see past the challenge in front of us to a solution, that kind of thinking is what art gives you, and it's what Yes And gives you. Because like he was saying earlier, I see Yes And not as just compliance. I see it as acceptance of the, it is what it is, now what?
Yeah. It is what it is, now what? Yeah.
That's how I lead my company of actors. Like, as a director, everyone's looking to you. The buck stops with you. And so you have to accept it. And the faster you accept it, the faster you get to a solution. So to me, Yes And is about getting to acceptance as quickly as possible and not being afraid of what you might have to accept as reality. Just, it is what it is.
You are listening to Impact. You're listening to our Friday show, which is about arts and theater specifically, and about how artists are faring. Today, we are talking about how art can actually get us through this pandemic, and maybe we can come out better on the other side. Sarah, I wanna throw some things at you, because we've talked about this before, right? Arts and economics are pretty closely related. I know that artists are the first ones to go into a neighborhood and revitalize that neighborhood, and often then you get kicked out, but.
Right.
But talk to me about what economics, how arts drive economics in cities.
Well, yeah, I think the world is learning something that people in the production and event industry know, which is how much convening drives our economy. And whether that convening is in an educational environment or entertaining one, or an expression of faith at religious gatherings, that's all part of the cultural fabric, that's the network by which our money actually travels. And the people who make convening possible and whatever, every serviceable in every way people want to come together, they have a lot of impact on the success of the country as a whole. And those people are often ignored or invisible because they might be invisible by design because they're behind the scenes, mm-hmm. or they're ignored because it's easier to exploit the creative sweat equity in our country than it is to exploit other forms of labor.
Unfortunately, it is. Matt, is Comedy Sports still on Belmont?
The Chicago location?
Yes.
Yeah, we're on Belmont, the old Ann Sather's location.
Okay, so, oh, wow. So you are, people come to, now I want a cinnamon roll. Thank you, Matt. So people come to see Comedy Sports, and before they come to see Comedy Sports, they go to dinner across the street. And after they see Comedy Sports, they may go to a bar and have some drinks or walk down the street a little bit and have some ice cream. So that they're not just buying a ticket from you. They're buying a ticket from the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And you and you're working together. Most theaters work together with their neighborhoods, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the thing about Comedy Sports, so we have 29 locations. They're all owner operated. They're all small businesses or little nonprofits. So it's not like, you know, your money isn't going to some other place. It's staying right in that community. It's paying those improvisers and that staff. And yeah, they're involved in their local chambers and they set up dinner packages. And I would say that's a true of a lot of kind of comedy theater and theater. You know, I don't know, Carrie, if you were around when they were starting Belmont Theater District, but there are so many theaters on Belmont
now
that they've just kind of like tried to make it a Jeweler's Row for theater and told that story. And I think it's kind of exciting to have that kind of a cultural hub that's nowhere near downtown, nowhere near the Loop, for those who know Chicago. It's just this kind of neighborhood, really kind of neat experience.
Yeah. So
it's important. Yeah, just wanted to add that you're talking about what really is a missing link in our economy between the nonprofit arts sector and the commercial arts industry.
Oh.
And it's that missing link that's the mid-level professional pipeline, the mid-level market. And Chicago has its, you know, has its various sizes of theaters, and how important the connection to those storefront theaters are to the pipeline of great playwrights and directors and
Absolutely.
Things that come out of there. And to give us Netflix and HBO and kind of pass through my company here in Las Vegas. And so there's a whole creative brain trust that lives and breathes in that mid-level emerging professional market that is already suffering in places like Chicago and Las Vegas. And that's the area that I'm most dedicated to preserving, because as a new works producer, I understand what happens to the entire state of the art when you lose that level of creativity that's a mix of some training and experience and enough wiggle room to invent.
Okay, so let's start this conversation, and we will take this conversation as we meet and talk every Friday on the air. But how is it that we can come through this with a mindset that local artists matter, that local artists are the people who are in hotels, and that they should be supported when they're doing their art as well as the larger shows?
Mm-hmm.
You have a minute.
it's promotion is a big thing. Promoting the local artists alongside the strip offerings would acknowledge them as all part of one creative economy.
Ah.
And that is something that all is just a matter. It's an easy choice. It doesn't involve moving money. It's a mindset, and that's all it is. And if you change that mindset, the arts community can start to come together with the business community organically, but it takes that leadership.
And I might also add that, and maybe it's just saying the same thing over again, which I'm great at, but I think we need to shift how people cultivate their identity around celebrity to location.
Oh, God.
So, yes, thank
like,
you.
If yes. I'm, you know, right now, you know, you're binging Ozark and you're binging this and you're binging that, and they're all mass produced things. Instead of going, I'm in Chicago. Who are great? You know, do I know mm-hmm. who TJ and Dave are? Do I know who the great local talent is?
Yes.
And maybe part of this will give us a little bit more appreciation for the just that absolute block around us and who's on that block and who's creating the art on that block. And does it help me think better of myself that I know who those people are and that I enjoy them as opposed to enjoying the same thing that everybody's been programmed to enjoy?
Okay, so Matt, you have two right. seconds to give us a comedy sports link.
Yes.
Because you're doing online comedy sports. That link is what?
Please go to CSZWorldwide.com. It lists all 29 of our theaters and what they're doing on Zoom to do shows, to do training, and places you can go to GoFundMe and help them out.
Okay, we are at the end of our half hour of the second full week of Impact. We're going to be talking to Sarah every Friday about arts and life and economics and everything else. And Matt, you are welcome to join us anytime. I love talking to both of you. I'm going to be following developments regarding budget cuts, especially as it relates to education. And I will post anything new, like I said earlier, on Facebook/Nevada Voice. We'll be back on Monday at 7 p.m. And you can get this show via and previous shows on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Thanks for listening to Impact.